A diagnosis of breast cancer can cause a life-changing ripple effect of impact, affecting those we love the most and those upon whom we lean for comfort and strength in the most challenging of times. My name is Aisling Hurley and I'm the CEO of Breast Cancer Ireland, and you're listening to More Than a Lump, a podcast that talks openly and honestly to a selection of guests about their very personal connection to breast cancer, be it through their career choice, their own first-hand experience of the disease, or through sharing the experience of close family members. My conversations will centre on how breast cancer has informed their perspective on life, love, family, health, their goals, and indeed their aspirations. Although each story is utterly unique, the one common thread that runs through each one is that breast cancer is more than a lump. Georgie Crawford was due to return to work at the end of her maternity leave and only 32 years of age when she first discovered a lump in her breast. Shortly afterwards, she was diagnosed with breast cancer. In those early days, weeks and months, as the impact of her diagnosis began to hit her, Georgie turned to the people in her life that she loved and most of all who loved her. In particular, her fantastic husband Jamie, her wonderful mum Siobhan, and together they steadied her, put their arms around her and nurtured her back to health. Now an ambassador of Breast Cancer Ireland, Georgie joins me today with Siobhan to reflect on the past 4 to 5 years, the highs, the lows, and to share with us how finding a lump has utterly changed her life in so many ways. Georgie and Siobhan, you're very welcome to the More Than a Lump podcast.
Thank you so much.
It's lovely to see you both here today, both looking so healthy and well as usual, and fantastic to be able to have this chat after the few years that we've had. Siobhan, I've seen for myself what an amazing support you have been to Georgie over the last 4 or 5 years, whether it has been clapping as she was dancing, going through chemotherapy up on a stage in the concert hall, or whether, you know, running the Great Pink Run and you're all there as a family unit.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been phenomenal, the support that you and your family have given to Georgie. And Georgie, you're just back from New York, having realised a dream of a half marathon, which I can't get over, which is fantastic. And you took to running after your diagnosis.
Yeah, so in my recovery, I'll never forget it, my oncologist, Dr. Jenny Westrup, who is an earth angel, said to me, Georgie, you have to exercise. And she's an American lady. Mm. And I'll never forget the exact words that came out of her mouth. She said, Georgie, women who exercise in their recovery do better. Wow. And when she said that, I'll never forget where I was sitting. I looked out a window and I thought, I have to find a way to make this work for me. So I was determined. And one day I hopped up on a treadmill and it just felt right. And I've never looked back. Look, I don't put on my runners and skip out the door every day delighted to be running down the road, but I get it done. And I think I quickly realized that it helped my mental health even more than my physical health.
Yeah, and I think that's what's key. We always say, you know, exercise, it's one of those risk-reducing factors that even if you just walk, you know, get your steps in, it does release endorphins. It does give you time to think and it makes you feel in a better place.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, in my recovery from cancer, I was given time. So before I got sick, I was always running around like a headless chicken, lots of frantic energy. And then when I got that time to actually think about how do I feel after coming back from being outside or going for a walk with my mum, and I'd say, I feel better. Yeah. And how do I feel after going for a run? Well, I feel empowered. I feel less anxious. So taking the time to really think about what I was doing and the positive impacts it was bringing to my life, that was the life-changing bit for me.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And just very briefly, I'm as an ambassador for Breast Cancer Ireland, but the Good Glow, I know you have spoken, you know, in depth about your diagnosis and your treatment, but just give us to these listeners a very short synopsis of that moment where you had to have that nighttime chat with Jamie when you really felt something wasn't right.
When I found the lump. Yeah. So I was really tired that week. I was getting ready to go back to work. And Jamie did the night feed. And when he was putting Pia back into her crib beside my bed, I sat up and my hand fell against the lump. So I was not breast aware, never checked my breasts. I was so lucky where my lump was because it was literally sticking out of my chest. And if that lump had been buried in my breast, I don't know when I would have found it. So Yeah, it's actually funny because I put Jamie's two fingers against the lump and I will never forget the look on his face. And the next morning I was standing on my mum's doorstep handing in my baby because I was going to the GP at 8:30. And I took my mum's hands and put it against the lump and her face was the exact same as Jamie's. It was like terror.
Yeah, it is. It is that moment of complete and utter shock. And Siobhan, you know, as a mom, I'm a mom of, you know, adult children, adult girls like 27 mm-hmm. and 22. And I think it grasps me in the stomach when I hear Georgie speak about it at such a young age. How did you feel?
I was completely brokenhearted. I was scared initially. I was so sad. Mm-hmm. And the shock of on Wednesday, we were out shopping for two cots for Pia, yeah. one for my house and one for Georgie's house. She was going into a cot.
Yeah.
And we were having a great time on Wednesday. We were walking every day. And on Thursday, you're sitting on the couch wondering if your own baby has breast cancer.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe it. I was completely broken. And I think, to watch your daughter mm-hmm. with the fear in her eyes. And I remember one day very early on, we hadn't had the diagnosis yet. And Pia and Georgie was in my house and Georgie went up to her old bedroom. And I'll never forget it. She was lying on the bed with Pia on her chest, trying to get Pia at 7 months for a little afternoon sleep. Mm-hmm. And I just went into the room. It was dark and I sat on the bed beside Georgie and she had big, silent, panicked tears rolling down her face. And I couldn't speak.
Yeah.
I couldn't speak and it was just awful. It was an awful mm-hmm. time. It was such a worrying time.
Of course.
She was just had a baby. She was just a new mum. Mm. And to see your
starting
child,
off her life, yeah.
Yeah, to see your child full of fear is the worst thing. Mm-hmm. I wanted to do it for her. She mm-hmm. said to me then, she said, Mum, I can't do this. I'm not going to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. And I felt, oh my God, I'm not going to be able to do it. But I had to be strong. So I said, I held her hand and I said, you can do it. I said, you will do it. And everything's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to be with you every step of the way.
Yeah. The words that everybody needs to hear.
You know? Mm-hmm. And I think that was a very difficult week waiting, you know? We'd never had breast cancer in the family. We were, you know, we were just
hale and hearty.
You know, she was, my kids are my life. And obviously, you know, when your kids get sick, you just can't do it. You just don't want to do it. You want to do it yourself for them.
Yeah.
And I would have taken it from her there and then. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Georgie is amazing. She's very vulnerable, but mm-hmm. she's very powerful at the same time.
Mm, absolutely.
And she helped me through it also.
Yeah.
But I said that day that when Georgie and Pia went home and Sam and Joe came home and I fell apart that night and I said, I can't watch her like this. Well, what are we going to do? So they would help me.
Brilliant.
And Michael and Kira and they were my little tribe in the background and Jamie, of course. Mm-hmm. Jamie was so practical and Jamie would give me the facts and say, you know, don't be getting so emotional. This is going to be okay, you know. And I'd say, okay, tell me the facts.
Yeah, just to reassure you.
But from there on, we people would say to me, God, you're so brave. Georgie's so brave. But we weren't brave. Mm-hmm. We were on our knees for a year.
Of course, yeah.
You know, every day I'd go to Georgie at 7:30 in the morning and you didn't know what was going to happen that day.
Yeah.
You know, you just wonder, is it going to be a good day or is she going to be low, depending, mm-hmm. you know, on the mm-hmm. treatment, how she was feeling.
Mm-hmm. And you as a mom, you kind of put on your body armor,
yes.
you know, to brave yourself
yeah.
so that if
I
you have
so
a bad
strong.
Day, yeah,
yeah,
if you do have a bad day, yeah. she's there to pick you up. And if yeah. you're in great form, then she can relax, you know, and I think yeah. that's what's lovely. And that's the great bond you have, which is amazing,
yeah.
you know, and I remember you saying at one point, when Arnie Hill was talking to you, you said, right, I have a mountain to climb. And I remember him saying to you, yeah. it's just a bump in the road.
Yeah.
And, you
yeah.
know,
and that was
right.
so reassuring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think when Georgie found the lump, I think that was nearly harder than when she was diagnosed.
Yeah.
Because we were so reassured by Professor Hill.
Mm-hmm.
And Georgie was then saying, it's okay, Mum, it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
And that she gave me strength.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable. It's hard to explain how you feel a bit better after the diagnosis.
Yeah. I've heard that from a number
but
of people.
It's, yeah.
It's just the clarity that... Okay,
we know what we're dealing
I know what
with.
I'm dealing with.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, I know
yeah.
my treatment plan. You know, they have yeah. mapped it out for me. And as we've always said, it's very personal to every single person that's diagnosed. You know, genetically, we know that your treatment plan is very different to anybody else's in the world.
Yes.
You know, which is
yes.
fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it
yeah.
just shows how far we've come.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think even, so when I found the lump, I was referred to Vincent's because that's closer to my home. And I rang around every breast clinic that day trying to get an appointment quicker because of my age, because I was under 50. My GP said it might take a little bit longer for me to be seen. So I rang around all the different breast clinics and I ended up at Beaumont Hospital. I didn't even know where the hospital was. I just knew it was like the other end of the M50 to where I lived. And I got an appointment and I was basically matched with Professor Hill. And the day I met him, I knew that it was meant to be. Like, he saved yeah. my life. He is a huge part of my life now. Like, don't I adore
oh,
him.
Adore.
I love going to yeah. see him. I make sure that, like, I'm really well put together. So he believes in me that I'm going to stay well. And I go in for my appointments and he's like, when's the last time you did a 10K? And I tell him, yeah. he goes, what time did you do it in? And he's always trying to beat yeah, me. Yeah. He does beat me, but I'll get him one day. But I think... You know, that was my path. It was meant to be. I was meant to be in his care. And I know so many people who are under Professor Hill feel the same way. Or whatever doctor you eventually end up with,
you do bond.
They
with
are
them.
The most incredible yeah. people on mm-hmm. the planet.
They really are. They really are. I mean, I talk to so many and it's just people's eyes light up because I suppose they are the saving team. They are the team mm. that, you know, got your cancer and got rid of it.
Yeah. yeah.
You know,
yeah.
so you are forever indebted
Absolutely.
To them.
Absolutely.
I remember when I was lying on the operating table about to get my lumpectomy. I don't know if I've ever told this story, but Professor Hill always took an interest in my life and mm-hmm. he knew, you know, about Pia, my family. He knew I worked in spin. I was a newsreader yeah. and I used to be called Georgie with a story in work. And I remember lying on the operating table and they just put the mask on me. So I was about to go asleep. And I remember him saying, this is Georgie with the story.
Yes,
and
yeah.
I remember thinking, oh God, all of these yeah. people are going to know what my boobs look like. But there's that love there, you know, mm-hmm. and that bond that we'll have forever.
Absolutely. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it is amazing. And I mean, then you took that big drastic step. For lots of people, it would be a drastic step where you went back to work, but you suddenly realized, you know what, there's more to life.
Yeah, I went back and obviously I felt like a different person. We all, you know, anyone who's been through cancer, you know, we're all different coming out the other side. And I remember I was going back to read the news and the stories were hitting me a little bit harder. And it used to be water off a duck's back, you know, reading the news for me. But I remember I'd be in the bathroom crying and it was around the cervical check stories. And oh my God, I just really... started to affect me. And so I started a podcast to tell stories of overcoming and survival and thriving. And it just felt like they were complete opposites. And one was kind of dragging me down and one was lifting me up. So I sat at my desk and I said, I need to make a choice. So I took the leap. I quit my job. And thankfully, I haven't looked back. But it just felt like, do you know what? I've come so far and I don't want to go backwards. And I'm working on every part of my life now. And I feel such positivity in my heart and soul that I need to stay with that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's a hard decision, but everyone was really supportive of me walking away from that life.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And the right one. You know,
yeah.
it's just proven it is the right step. I mean,
yes.
look at how successful things are now. You're doing what you absolutely love. You're really successful. At it, congratulations on your recent award,
Thank
Spiders.
You.
Well
Thank
done.
Thank you so much.
But it just shows you the impact you're having on others, as well as
it impacting you in a positive way?
Yeah, I think, you know, we all have a story, and I think by sharing your story, you can empower other people. And I wish, so I only discovered Breast Cancer Ireland, I think I was starting chemotherapy, but in those weeks when I had just been diagnosed, if I had have seen a story about a 32-year-old who got over breast cancer and ran a half marathon and felt joy in her heart again, because I was so afraid I'd never be the same person, I'd never laugh again, I'd never have the same crack again, you know. Mm-hmm. I just felt like it would, I'd be sad forever. Mm-hmm. And the only people I knew were Kylie and Juliana Rancic. They were the only young people I knew that had survived breast cancer. So then when I got involved at Breast Cancer Ireland and I met Emma and Paula and Olivia and Denise and all of these young women, and we really helped each other through that time. But it's so nice, you know, now that you have podcasts or mm-hmm. Instagram pages, that you can, all you want, I suppose, when you're diagnosed is a bit of hope. Yeah. That's all yeah. you need, is someone to just plant a seed of hope. And my mum did that for me every day. And I know she went home and fell apart, but yeah. that's what you need.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's interesting. I mean, I remember back in the day when you, we convinced you, even though you were going through treatment, to dance in the Battle of the Stars.
Convinced.
I mean, honestly. But I can remember you coming in when you may not have been feeling great, having just had chemo. And yet she would say to me, you know, oh, I'll just give me a bottle of water. I'll be fine. I'll yeah. get through it. And I'm going, oh my God, it takes a very strong, powerful woman. And that's what you are. You know, the strength that is within you is amazing. And I suppose the strength of your family holding you up, being there to support yeah. you, minding Pia, being there for Jamie. You know, that's all really, really important stuff when it comes to family and community. And it's one of the things, I suppose, in Breast Cancer Ireland, I'm always aware of, is that while the cancer diagnosis is to the individual, the knock-on effect in the family unit and in your friends and your local community is massive.
Yeah, and even for my mum, like, my mum didn't see her friends or didn't go out. Like, my mum has amazing neighbours who are her best friends, and I'd say on a Friday after a long week of looking after me, I'd say, "Mum, go on, go out for a drink." Mm. Or
I couldn't go out.
She couldn't.
Mm. I just couldn't go out, and if I did go out, I just couldn't stop thinking about it. I just couldn't let myself go and laugh or whatever, you know. Even though, you know, Georgie was doing well on her treatment and everything was going well, but I just couldn't. I just stayed with our own little, you know, our own little bubble, even before the pandemic.
I know.
And, you know, we used to be known as the party of five. There was myself and Joe and three kids.
Yeah.
And we were very close. Mm. Now we're a party of 11. Yeah. We've got Jamie, Kira and Sophie and our three little darlings.
Yeah.
So they're the ones that, you know, we all pull together. We're just stronger together.
Mm-hmm. At what time did you, at what moment did you sort of take a breath and relax once you knew that Georgie was on the recovery
yeah,
road?
I did. I mean, we the day that chemotherapy was over was a wonderful day. I found Georgie's treatment hard, you know, but when chemotherapy was over, Jamie invited us all up, and that was a wonderful night, and we'd loads of balloons and we let the balloons off into the air, just the family. And unknowns to each other, everybody brought a gift, which was beautiful, you know. Yeah. And I remember I got Georgie a bracelet with beautiful little motivational quotes on charms. And Kira comes in with a massive bouquet of flowers. We couldn't see her. They were so beautiful. And Audrey was there. And Sam was late. He comes in. He went and got it. He was down in Dundrum getting a teddy bear or a bear made in the bear shop.
Yeah.
And he comes in with the bear. And, you know, Sam is a man of few words, and the bear played Bob Marley's "Everything's Going to Be Okay."
Ah,
it's the tune he got into the bear. So those moments were wonderful. And, you know, we did relax, and I mean, we had faith and everything was going to be okay. And it was. It was okay.
It's amazing. I remember, it's now probably 6 years ago, I was sitting doing an interview similar to this with somebody, and I have five sisters and my mom, so the seven women, and it had not touched my family. And I was saying, you know, I'm very lucky because 1 in 9 is the statistics for women in their lifetime. And about 2 weeks ago after that, my mother rang me. She was down in Cork having a mammo, and she said, "You're not going to believe this." And she had been diagnosed again, she had a lumpectomy in that. And I remember my sisters all rallied to her, and my dad and everybody. But the one thing I suppose I was able to say to her was, it's going to be 12 months of horribleness.
Yeah.
You're going to be tired. You're going to be worried, of course. Mm. We're all going to be here for you. But I promise you, that 13 months will change, and you will be back playing your golf. You'll be back going on holidays. You'll be back to yourself. And I remember her looking at me in disbelief going, you don't know. How do you know that? And it was only from all of my experience in talking to others and their experiences that I was trying to be more uplifting for her.
Yeah.
You know, while I had other sisters, older and younger, who were falling all around her. Yeah. And I was kind of saying, you know, Mum, you're going to be tired. And yes, it is normal to feel tired after radiotherapy. But, you know, you're going to bounce back.
You bounce back.
You know, and trying to give my dad that kind of motivation to stay positive around her and not to allow her fear and worry overcome him. You know, because he equally was terrified at the prospect. And now she's finished her treatment. She's off her drugs after 5 years. The doctor said to her at one point, you'll feel 10 years younger. She's about to turn 80. And she thinks, yes, here we go. She's holidaying, you know, and living her best life, which is great. It is amazing how far we've come in the world of research.
Yes.
And in the world of new drug therapies that are available. And I suppose if you were to give anyone, that younger self, any bit of advice in relation to breast education and being aware, what would you say to them?
I think learn how to check your breasts. And I always speak in my corporate talks about, I think we're really good at getting our smear tests because it's been drilled into us. And, you know, we all were so affected by what happened to Jay Goody. But before I got breast cancer, never dawned on me to check my breasts. I didn't think breast cancer happened to women under 50. There was no breast cancer in my family, just not on my radar. And also to look out for signs. So I didn't look well in the lead up to my diagnosis. And I kept saying, I look so different. I look so different. And I'd always push that little voice out of my head that was telling me that there was something wrong. So I think to just, you know, it's that time piece, isn't it? Mm. That you're rushing through life and you're not giving yourself a minute to just stop and think. So just to become more aware of your breasts, what's your normal? I know Kira always says that. No, you're normal.
That's it.
So therefore, you know when something looks off, but also to trust your gut and take some time each week to sit with yourself and have a little check in. How do I feel this week, or how do I feel today compared to this time last year?
Mm-hmm.
And to go to your GP. And I think we can often feel rushed in the GP office, and you know, we don't want to ask them to check our breasts because we don't want to take up too much of their time. But you know, I think we need to stand up for ourselves a little bit and say, no, I want a breast check. Mm-hmm. You know, prioritize yourself, because early detection saved my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's one of the biggest things for us, is that, you know, we want women of all ages, you know, your mom, yourself, you know, younger, just know what the normal baseline is we're dealing with today. Empower ourselves as women to understand what's right and what's normal. And then check yourself on a regular basis so that if you do spot an abnormality, you go and have it seen. You know, you don't wait and think, there is that age old Irish thing of, oh, sure, it'll go away. It'll go away.
Yeah.
You know, don't trouble. You know, we don't want to go there. But yet I do think, when I look at survival rates and I look at how far other countries have come, like, we're doing really well, but we could do a lot better. And it is about that empowering ourselves to just be more breast aware.
Mm. And I think even for my mum now, and I went for the BRCA test, and thankfully I didn't have the gene, but I am so on top of you going. Mm. And what is the story with you, Mum? Because I don't think...
My GP told me that because of Georgie, I need to have a mammogram every year. So you have to make a private appointment every second year to go privately.
Okay.
But it's been pushed out now for 3 years since the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
But I just go every year privately for the last 2 years. That's what they said. I have to keep...
Yeah, it's just about
a very
keeping
close
on top
eye
of it. Exactly.
Well, because,
exactly.
You know,
yeah.
Just because it's your daughter. It,
absolutely.
You know,
yeah.
And you have to be...
Genetically, yes,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're both
and,
related.
You know, I've spoken to Georgie's cousins, female cousins, well, all cousins, and said, you know, keep an eye on everything. And
yeah, absolutely. And I suppose that's another thing. I asked the question of Prof Hill at the same time. You know, my mom was 72, 73 when she was diagnosed. Was she? What's my risk? And he was saying, low. I'm a low risk because I'm, you know, she was much older when she got it. But for instance, you were so young. You know, anyone that's in that kind of 30 and 40s, anyone related to them should be checked once a year. And they have an amazing family health clinic, in a history clinic in Beaumont, where they assess you both by questionnaire and triage you sort of medium, high, low risk, etc., which gives a great service to people, I think, where, like you, Siobhan, you're going to be checked once a year, which is key.
Yeah,
you know, and that is vital.
Yeah, but it's also terrifying, you know, to go and get that. Are you low, medium, high risk? But knowledge is power. And although it's absolutely terrifying, I was terrified going for the BRCA test because I didn't know what it would mean for my mum or my daughter. But I need to know this information. And, you know, sometimes it is about taking a deep breath and checking your breasts and picking up the phone and making that appointment you keep putting off. It's so terrifying and overwhelming. But I think, just awareness is huge. Yeah,
it's very important.
Well, listen, thank you both so much. It's been great. Powerful women around the table this evening. But thank you so much for coming in and talking to us. And the very best of luck with everything.
Thanks for everything that you've done for our family.
Yeah, thank you, Aisling, for everything you and the team did. You've just been such a great support, Georgie. And thank you so much.
Thanks a million.
Thank you.
The information in this podcast is based on the personal stories of those we have chatted to. If you are concerned in any way, please contact your GP immediately. Or you can contact us at breastcancerireland.com.